don't have Ken here to tell us where we left off, but I think I have. Oh, this is the wrong.
I'm gonna have to leave at 7:30, so I'm gonna go ahead and close.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I know. Absolutely.
We were around the stealing
the same thing.
Yeah, we are. We're. I think we're on verse 30.
I think 30.
Does that sound about right?
Yep. I like 30.
So. Yeah, so I can give it, yeah, the Cliff Notes version is that Jacob tricks Isaac into blessing him with the full blessing and support of his mother, Rebecca, right? And Rebecca? What'd you say? Did you say,
right?
That was kind of an amen? Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So, yeah, I wasn't just... He doesn't even finish the men. He just so that's where we are. Isaac had a great deal of affection for Esau. He just in that whole thing, he was going to bless Esau instead of Jacob, even though he may have known the promise was already given by God and passed down to Jacob. Didn't matter to him. He wanted to bless Esau. There was the little kind of the mom likes Isaac, dad likes Esau, that kind of thing. But they decide to, Rebecca and Isaac decide to take matters into their own hands and make sure that Isaac gets the blessing. I'm messing up, that Jacob gets the blessing. And so they do that, and they trick Isaac. So now, you know, all of that's happening. You kind of, we speculated that Isaac knew it was Jacob, because he says, the smell of my son is the smell of the field. You smell like him. He put on his clothes. We talked a little bit about that. So we're just going to skip all the way down to verse 30 in chapter 27. And the cliffhanger was we left it with Esau is coming back from the field now. So as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, verse 30, when Jacob had scarcely gone out of the presence of Isaac his father, Esau his brother came in from the hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father rise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "I'm full." No. "Who are you?" he answered. "I'm your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate all before you came, and I've blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed." And this is kind of a, there's no take backs. There's no take backs in this thing. I've already blessed somebody. You're going to see how Esau reacts here. Let's just look at that. Verse 34, "As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, 'Bless me, even me also, O my father.' But he said, 'Your brother came.'" And this kind of goes back to what Van said. He asked the question, "Who?" And now he's like, "Your brother came." "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing, Esau." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing." Then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him lord over you and all his brothers, and I have given to him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. So Esau returns. He discovers what's happened. He's filled with anger for his brother in verse 41. But he also has an emotion that, knowing Esau, you may maybe not expect. Right? What's the other emotion besides anger? Sorrow, right? I mean, he is... It sounds to me like a man who's almost distraught. It says, you know, at the very beginning, Verse 33, then Isaac trembled, and it's talking about Isaac trembled violently. As soon as, verse 34, as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, even me, O my father. Do you see the importance of the blessing that Esau would have? I don't think he's, I could be wrong, but I don't think this is just about the inheritance. I don't think this is just about the inheritance. You know, the first thing that you see from him is that he cries out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. One of my study notes says that Esau, like Isaac, was a victim of his own schemes. Remember that Esau had initiated the offer to sell his birthright rather than accept responsibility for his own short-sightedness. And so Esau says, he's taken away my birthright. Esau chose to direct his anger towards his brother, and that anger, and we'll see a little bit later on, is murderous anger. In verse 41, it says that he hates him so much that he says that he pronounces he's going to kill Jacob. So so he cries out with a great and bitter cry. He blames Jacob for taking away his birthright. And it says, now these two times, and now he's taken away my blessing. And so he puts all of that on Jacob. Remember, why did Esau sell his birthright? He was hungry. We said that the desires of his belly kind of overran his desires for either a future or for anything else. And we talked at the time about how his kind of carnal desires took precedence, and he was ruled by his stomach. He was ruled by those carnal desires, and it was his own fault. That he had sold his birthright. Of course, you know, Jacob's not absolved from his role in this. He was also deceitful. Mm-hmm. But right now, let's focus on Esau. From Esau's standpoint, was he culpable in any of this? Certainly in the birthright part, right? This, maybe you could debate, but this kind of goes hand in hand. The birthright and the blessing go hand in hand. He had already sold his birthright, and in doing so, he essentially gave up his blessing as well. But now it's coming to fruition.
My Bible has a note that says, you know, obviously the first son is usually the one who gets it.
Uh-huh.
But it's not, like, official until...
Until it's passed on.
Until it's passed on.
Yeah.
And for that reason, a lot of people would wait till later in life before they actually passed it on and gave the blessing.
Yeah.
So... Even in this sense, right? I mean, maybe Isaac was kind of, again, how much he knew who was who, which is still a little confusing to me.
Well, you want to focus on Isaac for just a second? Because Isaac first, as soon as he finds out, it says that he begins to tremble. He realized that he'd been duped. He begins to tremble exceedingly in verse 33. Remember, his plan all along was to go ahead and bless Esau. Now, we debated last week on whether or not he knew that God had already promised to Rebekah that the older would serve the younger, back in chapter 25. The one shall be stronger than the other, but the older shall serve the younger. And so there's an indication from God that Jacob would be paramount, that Jacob would have God's blessing. Isaac wanted to bless Esau, and so now he's been duped. Maybe he had hidden this plan to bless Esau. He didn't necessarily announce it. He said, Esau, I'm old, at the beginning of this chapter. Go out, kill this food, bring it back, and I'll bless you. Remember, it wasn't an announcement or a big party that they were throwing for this blessing. It was just between him and Esau. And remember, Rebekah overheard it. So she was maybe in another room or what have you. She's hearing what's happening. It's not something where Isaac had gone to Rebekah and the family and said, we're going to have this great occasion of this blessing, right? So there's potential here that he was doing it in secret, that it was deceitful. And now his suspicions, and we think that he probably was suspicious that it was Jacob. Remember, He said earlier on that you have the voice of Jacob, but the hands are Esau's, back in verse 22. Mm-hmm. So he did at least suspect that there's something tricky going on here when Jacob came in dressed as Esau, in Esau's clothes, and with the hair on his arms and the back of his neck. Isaac suspected it, but now his suspicions have come true. And so he trembles when he hears this. And then, of course, he says, your brother Jacob has come in and taken away your blessing. Of course, Esau says in verse 36, is he not rightly named Jacob? Jacob's name is to deceive or to cheat. That's what the name Jacob means. And so there's the play on the words. He's a deceiver. He's a cheater. He's cheated me these two times. Why do you think it's so important for Esau to receive any kind of blessing? Because then he says, basically, don't you have one? Can't you reserve one blessing for me? Can't you reserve just one blessing for me? Isn't there anything that I can get from you, Dad? He says that a couple of times. Back in verse 38, he says, have you but one blessing for me? Why do you think Esau's reacting the way he is? Yeah, why is he so needy?
Does he know of the promise at their birth, or is he...
I don't think that that's what he's angling for. I don't think he's angling for the promise that God's given, the promise of a nation, the promise of those things. I think it's really more simple than that. It's
just this physical
human nature.
It's just the example of the world, right?
I think, yeah, physical security. What do you mean by the example of the world?
You know, he's trying by his own works to get something, so he's looking to get something by his own works.
Uh-huh. Entitlement.
Okay. You game,
entitlement.
The word of the day. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, maybe. I wasn't even thinking so much entitlement.
Okay.
I was just thinking, it wasn't a Charles Stanley report coming here. You start thinking about, you know, man digging his own cistern or making his own cistern.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than looking to the living water of Jesus, right? That may be a similar thing, right? He's trying to win the blessing of his father as opposed to receiving it freely or getting it given freely. It was given freely to Jacob, but he's trying to win it. So maybe that's the kind of the analogy of human calculus.
On my own, yeah. There's two things that jump out to me when you think about this passage.
Thanks, Bob.
You know, good fast forward to the New Testament. One is that the blessing, Isaac's blessing is finite. Once it's given, it's exhausted.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Jesus talks about kind of unlimited, you know, grace. And then secondly, my favorite parable is the prodigal son. This, you know, think about people hearing the prodigal son parable for the first time. And mm-hmm. You know, they've studied this scripture their whole lives. The prodigal son would be such a dramatically different spin on grace and blessing.
Yeah.
That this is, I mean, you're talking about Old Testament justice. That's what this is. And
it's exhausted, right? The blessing's exhausted. He has no more to give. He's going to give almost a backhanded blessing here in just a second, but I think for Esau, there's different layers working here. I think the very first time, and this is reading probably way more into it, but he cries out bitterly, bless me, even me, oh my father. He does that once in verse 34, and then again, have you not one blessing for me in verse 38. So in verse 34...
And even in 38, he wept aloud again, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in verse 34,
it's a pretty dramatic scene, I guess.
Verse 34, he realizes that Jacob had came and stolen his blessing, and in verse 34 he cries out, bless me, even me also, O my father. And of course both times he uses that, O my father. There's a biblical word. It's a lamentation, right? He's just crying out to him. I think there's a couple of different layers, and I've heard other pastors preach about on the very kind of just personal level, it's the blessing and acceptance of your father.
Right.
And there's very potentially this It's acceptance. It's blessing. It's the favor that you receive from your father. And that very first cry out, I believe, is that initial reaction. You mean you're not going to bless me too? Oh my God. And the tragedy for him that means, this is, I'm sure that because Isaac loved Esau, I'm sure that Esau's love for his father was also there. They were running mates, you know, they were buds, mm-hmm. right? And now I'm not going to get your blessing. Can you imagine? It's almost like a broken relationship for him. It's, Dad, why not? I can't believe this. It's pulling the rug out from under him. And
but that's from his perspective. I mean, that's
from
Esau's perspective. Yeah.
It might not be, but
I'm not blessed,
but probably one of the things that we missed from this too is the cultural implications we don't understand because we don't have the same traditions, the same thing happening with us. But for him, that I believe that initial is what this can't be.
But and the thing that, is that's what Matt was saying, that he's tied it to, he's tied the relationship to the blessing, so to speak.
Yeah, right? And he's feeling like
it's about me. It's about
I'm being abandoned maybe by dad. This whole thing.
Right.
But I believe it's a very relational, and the initial response is a very relational response. It's, I'm not getting dad's blessing. And the modern day application, obviously, is the importance of fathers to their young men. And the importance of our love for our sons is huge. It's so huge that I don't think we even realize, you know, I don't know how many of you have lost parents or lost fathers, but I know that that bond between me and my father is just the tightest thing, even though, you know, our relationship was great and never had issues. But, you know, I could look back and I could say, well, all these things that he could have done or should have done, but I don't even think of those things. I just think of, that's my dad, you know, and I would defend him and love him and know that he loved me. That bond between a father and son is so huge. And that, you know, we have an application both as sons, but we also have a greater maybe application as fathers to say, you know what, we can't underestimate, I think, the importance of our lives to our sons, the importance of what we do and say and how we react and how we interact with our sons is so influential on who they are as young men.
No, I mean, two things. I was struggling to kind of see the forest a bit in terms of the takeaway from the passage.
Yep. Uh-huh.
But if you read into some of the detail and you take that as the application, I'm okay. Is there a bigger takeaway from this passage? I mean, from a more...
Well, I think that, you know, the very simple takeaway, the thing that I haven't touched on, if Dennis was here from a few weeks ago, he would say, really, this is all just pointing to Jesus, right? This is all just Jacob gets the blessing and then Jesus comes, right? That's kind of the deal. And Esau takes a different path. He marries the Hittite women. He's more of a wild person. He has anger issues. He's emotional. Remember earlier we said he sold his birthright because of his stomach, right? His carnal desires. Well, here you kind of see him. He's emotional. He's an emotional guy. He's going to react. In a minute, he's going to say, well, I'm going to go kill my brother now, right? So he's just this guy who's not on an even keel. And so Jacob, on the other hand, while he has his deception and what have you, his character is fairly consistent maybe, but that's going to be the family line that's blessed with the birth of Christ. Eventually. So there's that implication. Why is it in the Bible? Because of that. But every word in this Bible is instructive for us, and we can read into and we can see how the players in this are playing out. And I believe that there's also other levels of application that we can take from it, including just how important that relationship is between father and son. And so that's a separate takeaway. We can look at it just from the theological standpoint. Christ is coming, and we're probably all thankful that he's not coming from Esau's line because of the craziness that is Esau. But from the practical, what do we take away when we read about these characters? You know, that relationship is huge. Maybe Esau shouldn't be reacting as emotionally as he is. If he was leaning on God and his sufficiency was there, his sufficiency wouldn't be rooted in the blessing of his father. You know what I mean? Because I have actually taught this before to a group of men, and I had a man come up to me afterwards who said, this was really impactful for me because I have a broken relationship with my father. A terrible history of abuse and other things, like the worst things that you can think of with his father, and it's very emotional for him, and he didn't want to be that way with his own son. Do you follow me? And so we had this huge conversation about fathers in this passage because of his broken relationship with his dad and his desire not to pass that on to the next generation in his life. And so all of those kind of implications are kind of at play here as well.
I think if you read against the backdrop of what you think of as a traditional society where man is in charge and firstborn, primogenesis,
right, yeah.
That's the default state. I mean, this passage is quite radical. Because you have the wife
taking,
making a decision, taking agency.
That's true. Yeah.
And you have you're putting younger ahead of
two
younger.
Elements, yeah.
And I think, I mean, I know we're going to get to it, but I think there's some reflection of this in Jacob's own kids. Joseph is the youngest, right? His all his gifts inspire a lot of anger and jealousy in his siblings. It goes back to Cain. Was Cain the older and Abel the younger?
I was thinking about that.
Sorry?
No, I was thinking it did tie back to maybe Cain and Abel.
Certainly the murderous intent that comes from Esau definitely ties back to that. And it was a jealousy for Cain and Abel, and maybe you've got a jealousy here as well.
Does Rebecca tie this too strongly to tie back to Eve? kind of a... Although Eve's conspiracy was, ill-founded, this one was on direction from God. Is she the first woman in the Bible to take a direct action?
Well, it goes back to Sarah, though. Remember Sarah when the blessing wasn't coming, Sarah initiates Hagar into the scene. And so when we were talking about that, we were saying doing God's will my way, right? They knew his plans, but they weren't patient enough to wait for those
to
happen.
In their own hands to
so
act.
They decide to take it into their own hands, right? So I was saying on Esau, that first cry out, I think, is just that initial, I got to have my dad's blessing. The second cry out happens after his dad says what the blessing entails. Right? Because then dad says, no, I've made him Lord over you and all his brothers, and I've given him to for servants and grain and wine. I have sustained him. What then can I do for you? And then Esau cries out again, have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me even also, O my father. So his second cry out is after he hears what the blessing entails. by the way, I have nothing for you, my son, right? There's nothing behind the next curtain, right? And so the second cry out is almost like a, oh, this is even worse than I'm at. If you're thinking you're Esau, if Esau's at first just, I'm missing dad's blessing, and now he realizes all of these things, now I'm not going to have any of that. It's almost like Esau's almost, this is worse than I imagined it, right?
It doesn't sound like a blessing at all.
No, right.
But had it been the other way, how much would Esau have been like, oh, I have everything, I'm going to share some with you?
Oh, absolutely not. There's no indication that he would.
In your vision,
not in his character.
Exactly.
Right?
So, he knew as soon as he said, I've given him a blessing, what that entailed.
Uh-huh.
And then when he says it out loud,
on the one hand, you can look at Esau and you can go, wow, that guy, he deserved it. On the other hand, when you read the next thing where it says he lifted up his voice and wept, you can just think about the anguish that he's going through and how devastating this is to him.
I assume there's, for the rest of his life, the stigma too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Well, he didn't get the blessing.
Well, let's read.
He was the firstborn, but he didn't get it.
To me, what's curious is Isaac's lack of calling out Jacob for what he did. I mean,
as soon as Esau shows up, he's like,
so that is a bit confusing.
Sorry.
What's the fact
that he didn't chastise or he didn't reprimand Jacob for what was done? I mean, it was kind of all right.
That's pretty clear cut.
Yeah, it happened. Well, and again,
this probably is a little cultural too. It's like my word. There's no take backs on my word, right?
Once you've said it,
my word is my bond. I've said it. And that settles it.
Very much.
That's so sad that you say it that way. It was cultural back then for your word.
Because right now it's not, exactly. Right? Look at verse 39 real quick. He cries out, he lifts up his voice, verse 39. Then Isaac, his father, answered him. And so here's kind of the backhanded blessing. Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. That's almost like, it's not even, okay, now it's not just a blessing, but it's almost a curse.
It is. I read it more like that.
Right?
It's so literate.
It just gets worse and worse for Esau.
He's in the tent, he's blind, and it's like a CNC, you know. First one comes in, you get this very literate blessing about, you know, wine and all that.
Yeah.
And then the second blessing is, you know, the yoke and the sword.
Right. It's like just
pull the strong string and you get really inspiring or uninspiring.
Very much like what was that? Let's make a deal, and you open the wrong tent, and you get the curse, not the blessing.
Verse 28, that's
the other one.
The chewing gum,
right? Or the chewing gum. Get a pack of chewing gum. Yeah. So verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him, and Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. Once dad's gone, Jacob's dead. Just a murderous intent now.
Fredo, I'm trying to think of instances where there is a gracious second place, right?
Yeah.
Where somebody says, you were the better team. You were...
Congratulations.
Congratulations. How can I...
Being a good sport.
Yeah.
Esau's not a very good sport here, right? But things kind of start to mount for him. I mean, it gets from worse to worse to worse. And then he finally gets what amounts... His blessing amounts to a curse. It's... You're not going to be where the earth isn't going to give forth its fruit. It's almost you were taking it back to Genesis, to earlier in Genesis, to the Garden of Eden. It's almost the same kind of thing, you know. You're going to have to work harder for what you get from the ground. Remember, that's kind of the same thing that happens to Adam. Is you're going to have to work, and the woman's going to suffer in childbirth, and it's almost similar to that with Esau. It's, You're going to be away from the fatness of the earth, and your dwelling will be away from the dew of heaven on high. In other words, you're going to struggle, bud. Your crops aren't going to come in easy. You're not going to be in a place that has good rain. You're going to live by the sword. In other words, your life is going to be full of conflict. You're going to have conflict with nature, and you're going to have conflict with man. And then he says, kind of at the end of that, you're going to serve your brother, but eventually you're going to grow restless, and you're going to break the yoke of your neck, off your neck. So eventually, he's saying that you're going to break away from that control that your brother has over you. Eventually, you'll free yourself from your brother's control. And of course, Esau goes on to say, I'll kill my brother. Rebecca's going to learn of this. Verse 42, I think we can finish this real quick. Verse 42, but the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. I don't know why that's funny. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you. and he forgets what you have done to him, then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of you both in one day? Then Rebekah said to Isaac, I loathe my life because of the Hittite woman. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me? That goes all the way back from the fact that in chapter 26, verse 34, Esau was 40, and he took a couple of Hittite women, and he made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah because of that. I don't know anything about these Hittite women, but they didn't like them.
They were trouble.
And so she doesn't like that, right? She doesn't like these Hittite women. And she's worried that Jacob's going to marry a Hittite woman as well. But here's what's happening. Esau's murderous words get to Rebekah, and Rebekah sends her son away. Here's the curse. And this is really kind of the curse that she gets for being deceptive. Remember back in chapter 27, verse 13? Jacob says, look, this isn't good. We shouldn't be doing this. And she says, the mother says, let your curse be on me, my son. Let your curse be on me. Well, this is coming home to roost now for her, because she's sending Jacob away. And what we know, because we know the rest of the story, she will never see him again. And she says, I'm going to send you away when your brother's anger, when he cools off and he forgets. Do you think Esau's going to forget this?
It doesn't sound like it. And she's already basically acknowledged that she's lost Esau.
She has. She
says, why should I lose both of you?
Right, she's already lost.
That's done. Esau's done.
I'm sure Esau knows her role in the whole thing. He's kind of figured out the whole plot, right? And so she says, go away. J. Vernon McGee says about this, this is where Jacob is going to learn his lesson. He's going to flee. She says, flee to my brother Laban. This is where Jacob's going to learn his lesson. This is where the chickens come home to roost. Uncle Laban is going to put him through school and teach him a few things. Jacob thought he was clever, but Uncle Laban is an expert at cleverness. Poor Jacob will find he's just an amateur and is going to cry out to God in desperation before it's all over.
Is that the teaser?
That's the teaser. That's the teaser coming.
Sounds like a little thing on the
right, right. And then the last thing about Rebekah is her plan to help God by lying and deceit resulted in almost getting Jacob killed. In a twist of appropriate irony, her plan to show favor to her son resulted in her never seeing him again. The few days turned into 20 years, and she apparently dies in his absence.
So I'm going to go back to your phrase, helping God, right?
Yeah.
She thinks she's helping God.
She does. So, doing God's will my way is what we say.
Yes, that's exactly what she's... Here's what I'm going to do. Please bless my actions. As opposed to...
Not good.
Justifying her.
Trusting that... So here's a good... You just brought to mind, you know, when we use that word hope, that Christian word for hope, I say this all the time, is not wishful thinking. Hope isn't wishful thinking for a Christian. It's the belief that all of God's promises that he's given us is going to come true. That's what our hope is. Our blessed hope is that everything he's promised is going to come true. The problem happens, and I think it's happening here, is when we don't wait for that hope to come to fruition, when we get impatient, when we try to prompt God, and then when we try, in prompting God, we decide to just go our own path. And we do that often. We go our own path, and we go down that path without him hand in hand.
What is that hope? I mean, what is that promise from God?
Everything that he's promised. Wow, lots of things.
But it's really one thing, right? It's really just reconciliation.
That might be the paramount thing, but there are lots of other things. Never to forsake you, never to leave you.
Right.
You know, when I talk about...
But we blow that off. I mean, those are all...
When we talk about the blessings of salvation, I've said this a lot, too, that we are saved, we're being saved, we will be saved. Mm-hmm. We're saved... let me see if I can remember this now. We're saved from the power of sin in our lives. actually, we're saved from the condemnation of sin, and then the power of sin in our lives. We're being saved, and eventually we'll be saved from the presence of sin. And so all of those things are blessings, the blessings of salvation, and all of those are his promises, that sin will no longer have power over us, and that eventually we'll be free from the presence of sin when we're with him in eternity. So all of those blessings we can take hold of now and know for sure that they're going to come true. And here, like here specifically, he's given them really specific things. Really specific things. They're going to be blessed with a nation. They're going to have, basically, they're going to have lots of kids. They're going to be blessed even materially with land. So they're very specific things that if they would have just waited for, if they would have just trusted that it would happen, things would have worked out a lot differently for them than the way it ended up. So you've got a family that comes from the lineage of Abraham. Of all the families on earth, Abraham's family is blessed by God. Of all the families on earth, Abraham's family is selected and blessed by God. And now here, just a generation later, look at this family.
Same mistakes.
Completely broken apart. Right? I mean, talk about a dysfunctional family, right? You got a brother wanting to kill a brother. You got, it can't be good between Isaac and mother and father, right? That relationship can't be very good. Just a generation later, just completely destroyed. And a lot of that is the enemy. A lot of that is greed. A lot of that is just people living by their carnal desires and not trusting in God. But it doesn't take very long for this family to just completely break apart.
And then the contrast of God being faithful, God sticking to his word, God always being
and
there.
And yet,
yeah,
still blessed.
And then the,
and yet the family still
the
blessed.
The crescendo up to
gives us
Jesus
all hope,
and the ultimate.
Doesn't,
yeah, exactly.
Doesn't that give us all hope? Cool. Appreciate everyone's comments. Anyone like to close us?